According to statistics, the average person walks past 36 murderers in their lifetime.
Oh my God, she was murdered.
It was a murder.
Unlike in Hollywood movies, they're not easy to spot.
Where is she, buddy? Where is she?
The devil made me turn her to ashes.
They seamlessly blend into our everyday lives, assuming roles as friendly neighbors, helpful colleagues, or even the person lying beside you each night.
I wanted to be out of jail. I couldn't wait till I got out. I was in there with someone who was clearly psychopathic.
Using investigative research and primary audio, Morbidology is an award-winning true crime podcast that shines a light on the darkest corners of humanity.
Through our investigation, we have obtained evidence, which we are not releasing at this time, which leads us to believe Jolene is not alive.
Tune in to Morbidology each week across all podcast platforms.
You're listening to Campus Killings, brought to you by Abject Entertainment. Be sure to check out some of the other great true crime podcasts from this network, including The Murder in My Family,
DNA ID, Zodiac Speaking,
Scene of the Crime, Missing Persons,
Beyond Bizarre True Crime,
and Citizen Detective. All of these podcasts are available for you to binge on right now, wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe where you're listening to this podcast so you don't miss an episode.
Amy, today's case takes us to the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, or UIUC, where we'll be discussing the murder of a visiting scholar, Yingying Zhang, and the international impact that her murder had. This is a case where we get a very interesting viewpoint, another country's judgment of the United States criminal justice system. I found this fascinating to look at, and I think you're going to find it interesting to discuss, and I look forward to your thoughts on this.
Oh, good. Let's get into it.
Well, first, let's talk a little bit about the university to orient ourselves. UIUC straddles two cities, Urbana and Champaign, in Illinois, around 140 miles from Chicago, for reference. It opened its doors in 1868 and was created by an 1862 land grant signed into law by Abraham Lincoln. Originally called the Illinois Industrial University, it focused on degrees in engineering and the industrial sciences. The university was renamed University of Illinois in 1885 and has become a fairly renowned school. In fact, it's currently ranked number 13 for public universities in the nation, which is pretty high. And it has many Nobel laureate and Pulitzer Prize winners on its faculty. UIUC is also an enormous school, almost like a mini city. And it has, in fact, its own transit system and its own police force. While it houses 15 colleges under its university umbrella, and it's host to both undergraduate and graduate studies, the school is most known for its research, which is exactly why a vibrant agricultural sciences postgrad named Yingying Zhang was so interested in doing her doctoral work there. All right, now let's turn to Yingying. She was born on December 21st, 1990, to parents Ron Gao Zhang and Li Feng Ye. She also had a younger brother born a few years after her. The family lived in Nanpin of the Fujian province of China. And throughout her school years, Yingying was described as an exceptional student. She graduated the top of her undergraduate class in 2013 and went on to receive her master's in agricultural sciences from Peking University in China. From there, Yingying became a visiting scholar at the Chinese Academy of Sciences, and in 2017, she decided to travel to UIUC to do research in photosynthesis and crop productivity for her doctorate.
Wow, she sounds like a brilliant girl.
right? Impressive, ambitious. And in addition to being incredibly bright and ambitious, Ying Ying had other talents too. She was a wonderful singer. She was actually the headliner of a band called Cute Horse, as well as being described as a kind, happy young woman. Friends said that she was always smiling and she always brought happiness to everyone around her. Ying Ying's colleagues described her as a very talented, promising young scientist who was positively connected to the people around her. She had specific goals and was known to be extremely goal-oriented, if you couldn't tell already, writing herself positive encouragement in notebooks and journaling about her future. She was also engaged to a young man, Wei Zhaolin. Their wedding was set for October of 2017, and she planned to obtain her doctorate from UIUC before returning to China to work as a professor. This is a woman who had a very clear plan. I certainly did not have that type of plan at that age, so incredibly impressive. So Ying Ying arrived in Illinois in April of 2017 to take up a position as a visiting research scholar in the College of Agriculture, Consumerism, and Environmental Sciences on the UIUC campus. And UIUC also has a very large international student population, both at the undergraduate and postgraduate levels. And so Ying Ying had many colleagues who were also from China. So though she didn't know very much English upon her arrival, Amy, she really had a good support group of colleagues to lean on. And she was a very friendly person and made acquaintances quickly and easily. By June, she was looking into getting an apartment off campus and made an appointment with the leasing office to sign up for her place of her own.
Sounds like things are going so well for this young woman.
I know. On June 9th, she was supposed to meet the head of the leasing office around 1:45, but she sent a text to him at 1:39 that she was running late and would get to the apartment around 2:15. But Ying Ying never arrived at her appointment. You see, on the evening of June 9th, several of Ying Ying's colleagues had tried to get a hold of her and couldn't, which was extremely unlike her to return messages. They immediately filed a missing persons report with UIUC campus police. Remember, I said they had their own police force. And you'll be happy to know that in this situation, campus police took the report very seriously. We don't always see that happen in our episodes, but in this instance, law enforcement immediately sent out searches and the retrieval of campus surveillance footage. So you got to commend them for acting quickly. And their immediacy paid off. UIUC has over 2,000 CCTVs across the campus, and several of them were working and had captured Ying Ying. So investigators were able to look at this footage, and what they saw was Ying Ying getting on one of the campus buses and getting off a few stops later. She then tried to catch a second bus, but missed it by just a few seconds. Other cameras showed her standing at the bus stop and waiting for the next bus to come. As she waited, though, a black Saturn Astra pulled up next to her, and she leaned into the passenger side window as if she was talking to the person in the driver's seat. Then she got in the car and it drove away. So investigators wondered, did she know this person?
It looks like it's someone she knew or at least trusted for some reason.
It did seem that way. And remember that you said that. Investigators brought in witnesses from the bus stops and asked for information about the black Saturn and if they knew the man inside. So they were able to observe from the surveillance that it was a man operating the vehicle. One female witness said that she had seen the man and his car elsewhere on campus on the morning of Ying Ying's disappearance, and he had been dressed as a police officer. He told this female witness to get in his car as he wanted to ask her some questions. But because he was not in a police car, this student refused and alerted on-campus police of the incident.
This does not sound good.
No, but the reason I said, remember what you said, it sounds like someone she knew or trusted.
Yep.
Fortunately for this girl, I think her instincts were right. And usually if a police officer wants to ask you a question, they're not going to have you come sit in their car to do so.
Nor should you.
Nor should you. Exactly. Through the CCTV footage and other investigative means, detectives traced the car back to a young man named Brett Christensen, who had been a doctoral candidate at UIUC, but was not currently enrolled. His address showed that he lived in a nearby neighborhood outside of campus. So on June 15th, and this is 6 days after Ying Ying had gone missing, officers were able to make contact with Brent and bring him in for questioning, as he was the last person who had seen the missing visiting scholar. Brent was brought into the FBI's Champaign Field office for his interview.
Megan, why is the FBI involved at this point? Why not state police?
That's a great question. Since Ying Ying was an international student, yes, her disappearance became a federal issue, and the FBI was called in to work with UIUC police on the case. When asked where he was at the time of her disappearance, Brent claimed that he was either playing video games on my computer or taking an afternoon nap. But both the FBI and UIUC investigators knew that Ying Ying had undoubtedly gotten into the car, as the black Saturn in the CCTV footage showed a broken hubcap, and the car in Brent's driveway had the same exact broken hubcap. Oh, so there was no question here. Investigators began to heavily interrogate Brent, pressing him on his ability to prove his alibi and his knowledge of what happened to Ying Ying. Brent replied that while he'd seen footage of Ying Ying in the black Saturn, he didn't see any footage of himself, saying, you know, you can't see me on that camera.
You can't see him, but it matches his car, right?
It matches his car, and investigators also made it known that there was evidence of his arm in the back of his head through the several different angles of CCTV cameras. They pressured him about Ying Ying's whereabouts, and after about 20 minutes, Brent stopped answering their questions and began to visibly shake.
Oh boy. Okay.
After staying silent for a short time, Brent admitted that he had picked up an Asian girl on the day Ying Ying disappeared, but he wasn't able to give a clear explanation about where he dropped her off, simply saying that he brought her to a residential area. Investigators continued to press him for details about the Asian woman and the exact location of her whereabouts, but Brent refused to answer, saying, I know the typical advice is to get a lawyer before you answer anything, and I think I've tried to help enough. I mean, he's already talked himself into a real situation here. The police detained him overnight for initially lying about his alibi, but police decided to let him go and place him under 24-hour surveillance. Do you know why they let him go, Amy?
Because they wanted to get more evidence.
Yeah, specifically, they wanted to see if possibly Ying Ying was alive and he would lead them to her.
Oh, okay.
I mean, this was the hope, you know? They didn't know at this point if Ying Ying was still alive.
And now, a brief word from our sponsors. 2 weeks later, trailed by undercover agents, Brent Christensen and his girlfriend went to the candlelight vigil and awareness walk that UIUC hosted for Ying Ying. Students, faculty, and staff walked the campus from the bus stop she'd vanished from to her science building in a show of hope that she would be found. But unbeknownst to him, Brent was about to get busted. You see, Brent's girlfriend was working as an informant by the FBI and wore a wire during their date.
How long were these two together? Do we know?
I wondered the same thing. I'm not sure. It seems that Brent was actually married to someone else and was having an affair with this girlfriend.
And she probably knew, and she was probably not happy about that.
Exactly, which may be why it was easy to get her to agree to surveillance, you know? As they walked a little behind the rest of the crowd, Brent admitted to his girlfriend that not only had he kidnapped and murdered Ying Ying, but that he had done this type of thing 13 times before.
Oh, wow. So we're looking at a potential serial killer.
Yes, I didn't see that one coming initially.
Mm-hmm.
On the recording, Brent revealed that he kidnapped Ying Ying and took her back to his apartment, where he strangled and raped her before cracking her head open with a baseball bat and stabbing her in the neck with a knife.
And this is all caught on recording.
Absolutely.
Wow.
The exchange is absolutely chilling. I do want to advise listeners that this next part might be hard, So if you want, to skip ahead a little bit past this, you should feel free to do so. But I am going to read a few excerpts from the official transcript created from the recording. Okay, so this is Brent, Amy, speaking about Ying Ying. She was resilient, truly resilient. I tried to choke her to death, but she didn't. I couldn't believe it. It was unbelievable. Supernatural, almost, how she just didn't give up. I choked her for what must have been 10 minutes with my hands. I couldn't believe it. She was still alive. So I carried her to my bathtub. I got the bat and hit her on the head as hard as I could, and it broke her head open. At that point, I wasn't sure if she was dead or not, so I had a knife and I stabbed her in the neck, and she grabbed for it. It was unbelievable. So I chopped her head off, and I said that was the end of it. When his girlfriend asks about the rape, Brent replies, it was pretty short, 20 minutes maybe. There was nothing to her. I cut off her clothes and just started doing stuff to her. There was really nothing there. Like, I didn't give a shit, so I stopped. Later on, his girlfriend asks him point blank if he thinks he'll be the next successful serial killer, and he replies, I already am. He had admitted to her prior that he'd killed 13 other females, and he goes on to tell her, that's bigger than Jeffrey Dahmer, bigger than John Wayne Gacy. Later on, he says, Ying Ying is gone. I won't tell you where she is. I won't tell anyone where she is. The FBI has looked for her. The police and FBI don't know where she is. I am apparently very good at this.
Megan, it seems like there had to have been some signs. Like, if your boyfriend all of a sudden starts talking like this, like, did she suspect that something was wrong with him ever? It just seems so strange that this would be something, I don't know, that is normal to talk about.
No, I thought the same thing. However, they don't give us much information about her, probably trying to protect her.
Yeah.
So we don't know if this was something he had discussed before, ever, feelings about it. I don't know how she quite elicited this information. But yes, it is a shocking revelation. Also, people might ask, if he was in fact a serial killer, is this normal? Do serial killers brag about what they've done? And the answer is, yes, several of them do brag, but after they've been caught, not before, because they don't usually want to be caught. Another myth about serial killers. In fact, I know that there are a few that brag to someone that they did it. I can only remember, like, offhand, I can think of Richard Kuklinski, the Iceman. I know he bragged about his acts before he got caught. So it is very surprising, and it is, I would say, more rare for them to discuss this with someone before apprehension. When the detectives received this recording, a search warrant was issued for Brent's apartment, where they found a bloody baseball bat, among other evidence, which, when tested, matched DNA for both Ying Ying and Brent. On June 30th, 2 weeks after her disappearance, Brent Christensen was arrested for the kidnap, rape, and murder of Ying Ying Zhang. But even though he was caught, Brent would not tell the investigators where he'd hidden Ying Ying's body, which was really devastating to her grieving family.
Megan, is this something that we typically see because he's saving it to maybe cut a deal later on?
And because he's going to try to maintain his innocence, too. Mm. So if he gives up the body, then he can't claim innocence anymore.
How can he claim innocence anyway with all the evidence?
Well, he's going to trial. So yeah. This is what happened. As the trial neared, the prosecution demanded the death penalty. So even though Illinois had abolished capital punishment in 2011, but based on the evidence presented in the preliminary hearings, the level of the crime was considered to be so heinous that the options would be life or death. Now, also remember, he was charged and tried in a federal court, so that overrides Illinois. And it wasn't until after the trial that the public learned the details of this case. On June 12, 2019, 2 years after Ying Ying's disappearance, the jury trial of Brent Christensen began. Now, the trial was pretty cut and dry, Amy, with the defense admitting to the jury that their client had indeed committed the murder. At this point, their strategy was to downgrade the sentence from death to life without parole. So before, you would ask the same thing. I'm sure after considering all the facts and evidence, they realized that there really wasn't any case that they could put on. Which makes sense. Some trials then become more about saving their, you know, your client's life. Now, Brent had admitted to his defense team before the trial's start that after murdering Yingying, he dismembered her into black garbage bags and put them on the curb where they were picked up by the trash company 3 days later. And the defense tried to use this to garner a plea deal for a life sentence with the prosecutor, but the prosecutor turned it down. Yingying's family, who had flown over to the U.S. from China for the trial, was in favor of the prosecution's decision. So Brent would stand trial and risk the death penalty. You know, this works different ways in different cases. Gary Ridgway, the Green River killer, he was eligible for the death penalty. However, the families, they really wanted to know where their girls were, so they were willing to take that off the table. The prosecutor always considers the family's requests in these situations. Or usually. After 9 days of evidence and testimony and 8 hours of deliberating, the jury was unable to come to a unanimous decision. So, this happens with death penalty cases, and in which case Brent was automatically granted a life sentence. Yingying's murder had already been broadcasted globally prior to the trial, but the sentencing brought out extreme anger from Chinese citizens, with many cursing the jury and the U.S. justice system on social media platforms. In several online forums, Chinese citizens made comparisons between the lack of surveillance in the United States and how it took several days to find Brent Christensen, with the national Chinese surveillance system Skynet, and how Yingying's disappearance would have been solved in 48 hours had her kidnapping happened in China. Others argue that Chinese visitors to the U.S. received second-class status, and had Yingying been Black, Hispanic, or Muslim, her outcome would have been better, as statistically these minority groups have more political power than Asians. This was a surprising argument, I thought, yes. Actually. Mm-hmm. As we talk about in several of our other cases and stories, these groups are often very marginalized. Many Chinese citizens also question the logic of the U.S. justice system. Innocent until proven guilty was one of the most contested things, as well as the rights of the suspect inhibiting a speedy conviction. And brought into question was a person's right to remain silent and Miranda rights. One internet poster specifically talked about the uselessness of the life sentence, stating, quote, "In prison, he will be taken care of for the rest of his life. He intentionally killed someone, and yet the jury still does not sentence him to death. What are they thinking?" Another commentator posted, "This is proof the American justice system is not fair." Finally, another commentator said, "Now I think the death penalty is at the very least a way to comfort the victim's family." So let's talk a little bit. This is an interesting perspective, Amy. So I want to talk to you a little bit about the Chinese criminal justice system here to get a sense of why there was such an outcry.
We'll return after a brief word from our sponsors.
Do you know much about the criminal justice system? I know neither one of us are comparative scholars in that regard, but we have done some comparative work.
I'm not familiar much with the criminal justice system in China, I have to say.
Okay. I wasn't either, so a little research here and some information. China's current criminal justice system is nationally based, meaning that while the U.S. has different laws and different criminal procedures based on the state, so 51 different procedures, so China has one national procedure for all. Now, we have all the state's procedures, we have the federal government. So you have Yingying murdered in a state that did not have the death penalty at the time. There was an argument to use it anyway, that you have Yingying's case being tried in the federal system, which also has different policies and procedures. So I think that it's hard for maybe some Chinese citizens to understand this, because No matter where they live, they're all subject to the same sentences and procedures, no matter what the level is or what the geography is. Secondly, China's criminal justice system is really only around 50 years old, Amy, due to the massive cultural overhaul after the Cultural Revolution of the 1960s and 70s. And while it's definitely a more fair system than the imperial courts and laws of the pre-revolution, Westerners would definitely look at the criminal justice system there as more punitive, which is really interesting to me, Amy, because aren't we always talking about how punitive our system is?
Yep. So, Megan, I agree. Yes, it's hard to find a place as punitive as we are here. But do we have some examples of how their system's more punitive?
Yeah, okay. So the police have the discretion to send a person to a re-educational labor camp for up to 3 years without any judicial proceedings.
Oh, wow.
So in contrast, in the U.S., if we're going to punish someone, we have to follow both national and state criminal procedure before someone's liberties can be taken away. So we do have due process. The Chinese view whether someone has committed a crime as an ascertainable fact, and the rules of the criminal procedure are simply the vehicle through which those facts are disclosed. In contrast here, the U.S. has differences between factual guilt and innocence and legal guilt and innocence, meaning someone may have done the crime, but if the jury doesn't find them guilty because the prosecution has not proved their case beyond a reasonable doubt, the person is legally not guilty and free to move on with their lives. So again, we can see how the idea that though Brent was clearly guilty of the crime, the fact that the system gave room for him to go to trial as a potentially innocent person and potentially come out as in some form as not guilty would have probably been hard for Chinese citizens to accept. And Amy, one of the reasons Ying Ying's murder and the outcome of the trial resonated so deeply with Chinese citizens was because many of them send their children to the United States for study abroad.
Mm-hmm.
According to the U.S. State Department, in 2018, 300,000 Chinese students were considered exchange, visiting scholar, or doing study abroad in the United States. And I think in many ways, her murder was also a reminder of the inherent racism many people of Asian descent experience in the United States. As a postdoctoral fellow, Yang Yang Chen describes in her op-ed with Vice, quote, Ying Ying's life was swallowed by the dark currents of race, gender, and border politics. The same power structures undergird the institutions tasked with holding her killer accountable. Every person deserves safety, but when does justice bleed into vengeance, and how may our desires for protection embolden the systems that harm us? So again, this is very interesting to me about how the U.S. justice system is being perceived by others. And I just always have this perception that is very inside focused, and what I know based on our laws and our views towards punitiveness. But it does seem clear, or it does seem like we are, I would say, probably less punitive or punitive in a different way, just with the presumption of innocence and with the rights we afford our citizens. I wouldn't want to change that per se, but I can certainly understand the frustration that this family must have felt, especially learning the real horrid details of what this perpetrator did to their child and to their family and friend. But let's get back to Brent Christensen. After his sentencing, the documents the judge had ordered to be sealed prior to the trial were open to the public, revealing that Brent had disposed of Ying Ying's remains through his town's weekly trash pickup, where the bags he'd stored her body in were compacted several times before being taken to the Danville landfill in Vermilion County. Unfortunately, since over 2 years had passed by the time Brent confessed to this information, the FBI believed recovering Ying Ying would be virtually impossible. As the Zhang lawyer told the press, quote, it is evident that any attempt to recover Ying Ying's remains would be complicated and expensive, would require government oversight and the cooperation of the landfill owners, and would have no certainty of success.
I don't like how they felt the need to highlight that it would be expensive, because if it was their child, there's no amount of money that's too great.
I absolutely agree. I think they were just taking notice of the fact that this task would really, it was really seemed impossible.
They could have left that part. Levels. They could have left that part out, though. I don't like it.
I agree. I mean, they said that, you know, they continued that investigators described for us that at this stage, with decomposition and then compaction, the size of the remains could be smaller than a cell phone, which is a very hurtful statement, but I guess to make them understand how unlikely it would be to find these small remains, that was the comparison given, or the information given. For the Zhangs and for Ying Ying's fiance, knowing that they can never bring Ying Ying home was absolutely devastating. Not only had Ying Ying been brutally murdered, but they had no way to bring her back to China to be laid to rest in her home country. In her victim impact statement, Ying Ying's mother, Li Feng Ye, said, "How am I supposed to carry on living? My daughter did not get to wear a wedding dress. I really wanted to be a grandma." Ying Ying's fiance, Xiaolin, with whom she'd been with for over 8 years, also read an impact statement saying, "For me, the result today seems to tell me that I can kill anyone, and I can kill anyone with any kind of cruel method, and I will not need to die for it. And me, myself, will never agree with that." And just as Ying Ying's father had feared when he said in an interview before the trial that his biggest concern is that the suspect won't get a severe punishment, he now felt that that statement had come true. Brent's conviction of a life sentence did not feel like justice for the Zhangs. And perhaps this is the cultural clash of justice systems we're seeing here in China. While the government keeps the number of annual executions classified, it's rumored to be in the thousands every year. And capital punishment is considered by many scholars to be part and parcel in China's history and culture. So while in the U.S. many would see a life sentence and as being the living dead, or in some ways worse than death, for the Zhang family, who come from a culture where a death sentence is the line of justice, it did not feel like closure for them. And of course, there's the added trauma, Amy, of knowing the brutality of Ying Ying's murder and not being able to take her remains home to be buried under Chinese customs. So really, this was a double trauma for the family, and I think it brings up a lot of things about when someone from one country is suddenly under the laws of a different one, and how to understand that, or how to react to that, how to feel about that.
And now, a brief word from our sponsors.
What about the school's response? While Ying Ying may not have been murdered on campus, she was abducted from campus and by a former doctoral student. So let's take a brief look at what the university has done to honor and remember Ying Ying. When she first went missing, her friends and university community members hosted a walk and concert series to bring the campus together for hope in finding her and showing her family how much she was loved at the university. Remember, this was the walk, ironically, that Brent went on with his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. 2 years after her murder, the school hosted a vigil in which they announced a new endowment that they had created in tandem with the Zhang family, called Ying Ying's Fund, which would be used to financially assist international students and their families in times of crisis. Ying Ying's brother spoke at the vigil saying, "We have set up Ying Ying's Fund on one hand, because Ying Ying was always willing to help others when they were in need. We want to act in that spirit. On the other hand, we want to do something that can give back to this campus, community, and the people who have helped us." 5 years after her murder, the school is still looking at ways to make the campus safer, especially at bus stops, although there doesn't seem to be any major changes in the security at this time. And lastly, the university created a memorial garden to Ying Ying on the corner of Goodwin and Clark Streets near the bus stop she was kidnapped from. But Ying Ying's memorials didn't stop at UIUC. 5 years after her murder, a journalist and documentarian named Zhan Shi decided to make a documentary called Finding Ying Ying, in which she seeks to show Ying Ying as a person and not just a victim. In the interview, she explained, quote, To me, it was really important to highlight who Ying Ying was. The mainstream crime story narrative is really investigation heavy and also focused on the perpetrator. But sometimes we forget about people left behind in those tragedies. So that's why I wanted to tell a story on Ying Ying and her family. I agree. I was glad to see this because sometimes what we tend to remember is the perpetrator and those headlines about the assailant and not the victim. She also hopes the documentary will help other U.S. universities rethink their current policies and safety protocols in regards to international students. And as the film was released in 2020, right at the outset of the pandemic, where there was a surge of anti-Asian sentiment across the globe, she wants this documentary to create a better understanding of Asian women. So I would have to agree, that's very timely. Mm. The documentary is available on Paramount Plus for anyone who wants to check it out. For Ying Ying's family, there will never be closure. And we talk about this a lot in Women in Crime, Amy. Is there really such a thing as closure in these situations? The answer is usually no. Not to mention, Ying Ying may not have been Brent Christensen's only victim. Remember that? I discussed that in the transcript.
Yeah, and he also claimed he was a serial killer.
Well, he told his girlfriend that he had killed 13 other women, mm-hmm. Amy. So what happened there? Well, unfortunately, there was not enough evidence about this statement to reveal any other victims of Brent Christensen. And he never mentioned it through the trial proceedings again. So those comments were dismissed from the case. But that does not mean that there are not other victims out there waiting to be found. And it does not mean that they will not find other evidence to connect Brent Christensen to them.
He seems like the kind of offender who would brag about that, though.
He does, especially since he's already been caught. Mm-hmm. So I have a sneaking suspicion he will at some point reveal some evidence.
So you think there are more victims out there?
So it's possible that he was just bragging as if this was the case, but he seemed pretty comfortable in this endeavor. So I want to say that there's probably other victims. 13 might not be the case, but I wouldn't rule it out entirely. In the meantime, Brent Christensen is serving a life sentence in the McCreary U.S. Penitentiary with no possibility of parole. And for me, that's a relief to know that while perhaps not the perfect form of justice, he certainly won't pose a threat to any other women in the community.
Before we go today, if you'd like to support Campus Killings, consider subscribing to the show with an Abjack Insider subscription through Apple Podcasts.
Your subscription will get you VIP access to all the shows on the network that not only includes hundreds of episodes of ad-free listening, but also bonus content and early access to episodes.
For only $4.99 a month or $49.99 a year, you'll unlock a variety of listener benefits and you'll be supporting this show in the process.
Head over to Apple Podcasts and search for either Campus Killings or Abjack and you can start your subscription with a free trial.
Your support is greatly appreciated.
Thank you everyone for listening today and we hope you'll join us on the next episode of Campus Killings.
Campus Killings is hosted by Dr. Megan Sachs and Dr. Amy Schlossberg with research and writing by Abigail Belcastro. It's produced by Mike Morford of Abjack Entertainment. Be sure to follow Campus Killings on social media. You can find Campus Killings on Twitter with the handle @CampusKillings or on Facebook at facebook.com/CampusKillings. You can also visit the show's homepage at campuskillings.com. Be sure to tune in every other Saturday for new episodes of Campus Killings.